The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Lose all sense of reality and enter another world. Remember, do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Beyond.
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 What's up, everybody? Welcome to Podcast Beyond, episode 340. I am one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside my Italian meatball, Brian O'Connor. So you're drinking water there early.
Yes, yeah,
you didn't
beer.
Expect me to go right to you. That's what you get.
It's grain alcohol.
It's grain alcohol.
No, it's water. It's 11 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And then, in our ever-rotating third chair, don't call him error, Justin.
Aww, hey, guys.
Justin Davis, how you doing?
I'm great. The grassroots effort, like Barack Obama himself.
Is this your
himself.
First Podcast Beyond ever?
No. How do you not remember that?
I've done 340 episodes of them, Justin. That's why I don't remember.
No, this is my, it's not very often. It's one of those blue moon type situations. I think it's my third or fourth one in 3 years.
We're trying to be better about it. Of course, everybody, ladies and gentlemen, you know Podcast Beyond's new format is myself, Colin Moriarty, and then the ever-rotating third chair. That way we get more voices on the show. We get to give people the mic for a little bit.
Now we got two chairs.
Exactly. Yeah. It doesn't work when one of us is gone.
Let me explain the system that we are not putting into effect today.
Well, no, the system's been going for a while, Brian.
All right, I know.
You've been a part of it.
I know, I've been there.
The third chair has benefited you. You have been on a lot.
Right, but now I'm the second chair.
Right.
So now you're
filling in for Colin.
I was just going to say.
You're in the ever-rotating third chair.
Let me tell you the problem with Barack Obama.
That was going to be my question, is which one of us gets to be Colin.
Yeah. Well, we can all be Colin a little bit, I think. There's enough stuff. There's some JRPG questions in here, a whole bunch
of information. There's a myriad of exclusives coming to the PlayStation.
There it is. You nailed it. Ladies and gentlemen, of course, Podcast Beyond is IGN's PlayStation podcast, the number one PlayStation podcast on the internet. Every Tuesday, the MP3 posts on this podcast service of your choice. Then the video goes up on Wednesday, usually, probably, most of the time, on YouTube, IGN, and the IGN PlayStation 4 app. So make sure you download that. But for now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news. How many items are on the Roper Report?
Oh, man,
this week?
There are 12?
A dozen.
Wow.
A dozen, a baker's dozen. These aren't double sided.
That's not a baker's dozen.
That's just a regular dozen.
Regular dozen.
Certain bakers actually remove one for good luck and then they eat it. So
what do they do with it?
They eat it.
Oh,
get fat.
That's good. That's
why bakers are fat.
Yeah, if you're a fat baker, then people come in and they go, man, their food must be amazing.
Yeah.
So you skim a little off the top.
You're never supposed to trust a skinny chef.
Exactly.
That's what they say all the time.
Yep. Mm. Yep. Or a fat crackhead.
What about a skinny Italian?
I wouldn't trust most Italians, regardless of weight.
That's true. if they have the
meatball.
Vowel on the end of their name.
Dozen games discounted in the Golden Week sale on PSN. Greg, what's Golden Week?
Golden Week is this thing in Japan. It's a celebration they do there. So the PlayStation blog, they got together with the blog had nothing to do with it. PlayStation Network put on this sale where they're selling all these different games at a discount. Huge discounts.
And we're reaping these benefits, right? Even though we have no idea what Golden Week is here in the U.S.
Sure,
we
don't
live.
Celebrate. It doesn't matter, but they understand.
But we can celebrate the sales.
Exactly. And we celebrate Japanese culture.
Every week when there's heavy rains in Japan and the sun's setting and they get these golden...
How long can you keep this together?
Nope.
Wherever this one was going. We have a question about that from Jamie. Remember, be part of the show, everybody. Beyond@IGN.com. Jamie writes in and says, I love Western RPGs like Mass Effect and the Elder Scrolls, but I've always had a hard time getting into JRPGs. Are there any games in the PSN Golden Week sale you would recommend to someone like me as an intro to JRPGs Beyond?
Beyond.
Well, James.
E.
Jamie.
Like your wife, Jamie.
Jamesy. That's a weird name.
That's not his name.
You said it.
No, I said Jamie.
Jamesy.
Well, Jamie, there is a myriad.
Thank you.
There is myriad JRPGs that you can grab in this sale. The big one that jumped out at me was probably Tales of Symphonia.
Really? Not Persona 4 Golden.
Well, and Persona 4 Golden. Those are the two big ones that jumped out at me.
Sure.
I mean, yeah, there's a ton of the list, of course, is up on IGN. You can see it here.
I mean, for me, it's Chrono Trigger.
Yeah.
Jump in with that one there. I think it still holds up. It's still
$3.49 if you have PlayStation
Plus.
That's
crazy.
$5 if you're just getting it off the sale. Of course, good for your PSP, your Vita, and your PS3.
Yeah.
Chrono Cross is on there, too. For me, yeah, I highlighted Persona 4 Golden, running you a cool $14.62 right now with the PlayStation Plus discount. Otherwise, just
that's actually something I wanted to point out about this, is everyone talks about PS Plus, they get free games every month, right? And it's awesome. But you can't really write off how the discounts are steeper if you're a PS Plus member. Like, that totally adds up over time. Like, there's games that are like right on that line of like, well, maybe I want to spend, you know, $20 to replay Tales or whatever, but like if it gets even cheaper with PS Plus, it brings that stuff down into like the no-brainer category.
Yeah, sure. And what I like about that is that the when you purchase something, it's yours forever. When you get something for free on PlayStation Plus, your Plus can expire or whatever. You can stop paying for it, and you'll lose access to those games. But if you buy stuff with a discount, they don't make you pay the money back.
Hey, your PlayStation Plus expired. You owe us.
You owe us $6 for Chrono Cross.
But no, I mean, this is what we always talk about with the leg up that Steam has, right? Yep. And the fact that they can do those flash sales, do that crazy stuff. PlayStation's getting better about it, and this is a great example of it. Because there's a lot of good stuff even outside of just the JRPG stuff. Hot Shots Golf World Invitational for PS3, $20 regular. With the discount, it's $9.99. With the PlayStation Plus, it's $5.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
It's awesome. That
gets it closer to, like, this PS Plus column gets things much closer to, like, Steam levels of cheap. Like,
yep.
It was always sort of cute when we started seeing Xbox and PlayStation first try to sort of do discounts, and they'd be like, oh, you can get Max Payne 3 for $40 instead of $60, and you're like, what? That game's been $12 on Steam like 10 times.
Right.
They're getting better and better about it, especially with these PS Plus prices. Stuff like, you know, Metal Gear Solid HD Collection for $12.
Right.
Like,
that's nuts. Yeah. How many games is that?
The collection?
Yeah, it's like 4 games, right?
Right. Well, if you're getting into it, if you're buying the PS3 version, yeah, it would be all 3 of them.
Okay.
It gets complicated when you start jumping territories, but yes.
Got it.
It should be 2, 3, and Peace Walker.
Yep.
Chrono Trigger would be a fantastic Vita game. I mean, it's fantastic on home consoles, too, but like to have that on the go.
Yeah. Totally.
I want to give a shout out to Yeez Memories of Celsica, which I'm not pronouncing right.
Is it Wise?
Or no, it's how you say it. No, Yeez is right. I usually say in a joking sense Wise, but Colin doesn't hear to correct me.
I thought it was Ease.
What, you know what I say? Yeez?
Yeah.
It's one of them. Can we just call it Wise? It's in America.
We had 3 different pronunciations.
I've
been at IGN for 5 years, and I've never said the name of that game, nor have I had to until today.
Yeah, well, welcome to the PlayStation podcast. Somehow I got the most Midwestern
hardhead
in the office is the one who's always trying to do this.
Let me tell you about
Yeez. That one's fun.
Myriad of Japanese culture games.
Colin reviewed it, described it to me. He gave it a 7, didn't give it a resounding awesome score, but it described it to me as like an Amalur, Kingdoms of Reckoning kind of thing, where it's like, hey, it's an RPG. All these mechanics, it's very Japanese. Get out there and do it and have fun. And that's what I was doing. I was having a great time with it. So that's up there.
Is it still the one? Is the battle system where you just run in to dudes? That was always the old games.
No. It's not like that. You actually choose your attacks, but you switch between your party members. Each one of them haven't had attacks. So rather than like have one person who has like different spells to counter different things, you like, oh, this guy's only vulnerable to this attack, so I'm going to switch to this character who has that attack.
Got
and it that way.
It's I like
fun.
It.
Yeah, that one would be $20. I don't know if it's worth $20, but try.
Great.
It.
Jams or Jamsy has plenty of games.
Jamie! We knew his name was Jamie!
Watch Dogs is getting a season pass encompassing DLC that includes a unique single-player story, new game modes, and more. The pack is set to cost $19.99 in North America, though European pricing hasn't been confirmed. Let's talk about this. What do you guys think about buying season passes for games that aren't completely proven to be something you're really into yet?
Yeah.
Oh.
Because I know, so like a season pass for like GTA 5, if you play GTA 4, you pretty much, you know what you're getting into, right?
No brainer.
The new Assassin's Creed, you're like, I love the last 3 of them or whatever it is. I kind of know what that is. BioShock, same kind of deal.
Mario Golf.
Right. I'm like, more courses. Got it. I know. Watch Dogs?
Hmm.
Well, sure.
I want to know how much I'm really going to get into Watch Dogs, because it's a new franchise and stuff like that.
But that's no different than like pre-ordering the game itself, right? Like, there's certain people that are like, I like what I've seen so far. I'm confident in my purchase, and I'm going to pick it up. Like,
well,
they're not waiting for reviews.
No, because pre-ordering the game means you put $5 down, and then you could at any given moment go,
sure,
no thanks. This is $20 that you pretty much have to pay for.
Right.
And you don't get that $20 back.
That's a good point.
In fact, you could end up buying a season pass for a game that you canceled the pre-order on.
But you can wait. Like, you can play the game and then buy the season pass. Like, you don't need
true.
To.
That's true.
Good counterpoint. That's good true. Job, Justin Davis.
Yeah.
I mean, what jumps out at me about this, I have mixed feelings about this season pass. First of all, I think it's a little bit strange for a single-player game to have a season pass to begin with. It's sort of like they're already admitting up front, like, hey, we're going to sell you a bunch of shit after you're, after you're done playing the game. But the flip side is, it does say, look, we're going to support this game. We're going to have a steady stream of content. Like, if you liked Watch Dogs, there is more Watch Dogs coming, you know, spread out over a few months. So it's sort of like, you know, I don't know. I'm weighing those two things against
each other. For me, the season pass is always kind of that flare in the night, right? Of like, don't sell this game back. Like, this is our easiest easiest methodology to tell you we are going to give you more and call out single player stuff, because people like me, that's the biggest thing, right?
Me
like,
too.
When Uncharted's like, we have all this DLC and it's all hats and crap for your character, I'm like, well, fuck off. I don't care. But when Last of Us is like, hey, we're doing this and there's going to be, you know, Left Behind eventually, it's like, yes,
that's
on
exactly,
board. I'll never sell it back.
So we didn't get complete details on every single item that's in this Watch Dogs season pass, but they did announce single player missions and some stuff that sounds interesting, but they always bundle up. It'll be like, here's missions and new characters with, you know, a hat for your dude, and I'm like, I don't care, like, I don't want that stuff. Like, everybody just wants, in a multiplayer game, everybody just wants the maps, you know, or the modes, and, you know, in a single player game, you just want sort of the story content. But they bundle it up with a bunch of costumes, and, you know, maybe there's someone howling because they love costumes, but like, that's not me.
No, I mean, that was my thing with Infamous, right? Like, every time I unlock a new vest, it's like, awesome, I'd go look at it and then I'd be gone, and you know what I mean? I forgot that I'd even gotten the Coles DLC. I was like, oh yeah, where was that jacket? Like, I'd already beaten the game. I was like, that would have been cool to play in. Oops.
Yeah, I totally agree with you guys. It's interesting for me. I actually prefer this method to like buying the PS4 version, and it says with 42 minutes of exclusive content. I think it's such a dumb box quote to do stuff like that. So, I mean, if it gives them time to keep working on stuff like this and pad out this universe a little more, then sure. But I want to know, like, I want to know if I'm going to love Watch Dogs yet.
Sure.
You know, I need to, like, I really need to dig in with
that. Makes sense. I agree with you. I'm very selective about the season passes I buy usually, right? Like, Borderlands, I think, was Borderlands 2 was the one, the first one in a while where I was like, yep, here's my money. I love your
you're
game.
Already hooked and you get it and stuff
and
like that.
And then I never played any of it, so it totally worked to their benefit.
Oh,
like,
really?
It was $20 and I never got back to it. Now that it's coming to Vita, I'm hopeful that I'll
actually. Borderlands season pass was great.
I dropped some stuff down here. I'll be back.
Whoa.
What's next on the Roper Report?
Goodbye, Greg. Konami has announced that Metal Gear Solid 5 Ground Zeroes has shipped 1 million copies. The 1 million figure refers to how many physical copies were sent to retailers, not copies that are actually sold, and it doesn't take into account digital versions. For those reasons, it's unclear as to how many copies of Ground Zeroes were actually purchased.
Oh, Konami.
Yeah.
So adorable.
That's a great there's the stat, and then there's like five little things underneath it that are like, well, not so much.
All
like
these asterisks.
Double asterisk. This is totally an impressive figure, or maybe it is. Like, I don't know what Konami's expectations were, but it surprised me. I mean, I'm not a Metal Gear guy anymore. The series lost me with 2. You know, like Metal Gear Solid, the Metal Gear Solid 2. I'm like, you know, this is too much for me to keep up with.
Try Peace Walker.
And so, Peace Walker is one I got to play. And so I just kind of write it off. Like, it's not very big in my mind, so I'm like, that must mean it's not very big in other people's minds, too. And then it was a reminder that, like, oh, yeah, Metal Gear is a huge deal.
Yeah.
It's interesting, I think, around the office to be a Metal... I've been a Metal Gear fan my entire run at IGN, right? And a fanboy of it, in quotes, if you will, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, a big guy, you know, a guy who's, like, waving that Metal Gear flag.
Yeah.
But, like, for real, after Peace Walker and Revengeance, and, like, it's like Peace Walker was my peak, right? And then that was, like, my goodbye, I feel like, to the series, which I don't want it to be, but it was, like, all of a sudden, I was like, all right, cool. And then, like, Revengeance, I didn't give a crap about.
What did you think of Ground Zeroes?
Yeah.
I was devastated that I did not love Ground Zeroes.
Like, really?
It looked like HD Peace Walker and it was doing all these things. And I was like, yes. And I sat down and played it that day. And it was so frustrating to get caught and get busted and be like back to like Ground Zeroes. And I understand there's stealth games, don't get me wrong. But up until that point, I think the way the games had been real, right, in quotes or whatever, it was way different. In Peace Walker, it was literally like, here's a small area. I quickly identified there's 3 or 4 guards. I can shoot them out. I can do this. I can take care of them, and they're done. And then, like, this one, it was just like, there's a million people walk, or there's so many people walking around, and they all have these like really like real. They, now it's super real. Now they all have like, you know, binoculars, right, and they can see you, and it's doing. It's like that sucked a lot of the fun out of it. All of a sudden, it was like I had to sit there and like memorize everything.
I've been saying for a long time. I think I brought it up on GameScoop and Tech Fetish and other things. I've been noodling this feature for a long, long time about how stealth as a genre is kind of fundamentally broken.
Mm-hmm.
Because either the guards have to be, you know, big dumb idiots that patrol on these patterns, or they do act like people, and it's impossible because a human being wouldn't be able to outsmart, you know, yeah, 5 or 10 people that are as smart as you are. Like, you would lose. You would lose every time. And it's really trial and error. Like, it never feels good to fail in a stealth game. Like, if I fail in, you know, I don't know, like Resistance or something like that, it's like I reload and I, you know, aim better and that sort of thing. But stealth... I don't know. I feel like that genre, someone needs to like reinvent the stealth genre.
I agree. It might be just that I'm in a different place now. You know what I mean? Of like, I for greatest boss battles, right? I wrote about Solidus at the end of 2 and how I played through 2 all the times. I would have platinumed that game because I got all the dog tags. I'd done everything. I'd taken all the ghost pictures, all this different stuff. And that was when I could sit there and pour time into it. And like, you know, Ground Zeroes, right? I'm playing and it's like, I took a day off to play video games, and I was playing it, and it was like, I don't have the time to get committed to getting awesome at this game and memorizing the map and memorizing where people go and all that stuff. And it's like, right there's like, I can see that I'm never going to get to that point, so like, it's not even fun trying to do it this little bit.
They need to find a way to make you feel like a badass in stealth games without it just being trial and error.
Yeah.
Without it feeling like Ocarina of Time trying to peek around the hedges with the guards. Like, it's that, but in really crazy fancy HD graphics, kind of still, even Splinter Cell.
I think that the checkpoints are a big barrier, too, because it's sort of like, all right, I have to get through this section, there's 7 guys, but I got caught on the 5th one.
Yep.
I have to go back to the first one again. Kill him, hide his body, sneak around the car, go over here, go up to this hedge, kill the 2nd guy, 3rd guy, me back to the start, kill the 1st guy, kill the like, there needs to be a way to make that so. And what I do is after the 5th or 6th time, I just go the hell with this, and I pull out the gun, I just shoot the first 5 guys, try to stealth kill the 6th and 7th, who totally would have heard this first 5 guys getting killed, by the way,
right,
and then see if I can get through just to power through the next
checkpoint. That's like the big irony is once you fail a couple times, you end up being less and less stealthy because you're losing your patience.
You're trying to get through it, right? Like, I can't so many Ground Zeroes missions end with me like, I've got the objective, fuck it, you know what I mean, like, fuck it, we are flooring it, I'm calling the helicopter over there, let's just get there, you know what I mean? And then I'm hoping that it's like the little things will happen where like you'll run around this thing and they'll lose sight of you or they can't get to where you are, and it's like, good enough, like, I, you know what I mean? And I know we're all saying this is where we are in our lives. Obviously there's plenty of viewers and listeners out there who are like, this is why I love stealth, and that's awesome, but like, the kind of instantaneous reward I want, I guess.
I think it's very telling that as we grew up and as we evolved as gamers and as the game industry evolved too, most of the stealth games, most of them gave you that option to, like, do you want to hide and sneak around, or do you want to just run through and kill everybody?
Right.
Sure. And, I mean, there were – different endings were branched for games like that. I mean, the way I play Splinter Cell now is completely different than the way I played Splinter Cell when I first started, which was, like, throw a can, have my little gun, and I shoot a bell, and then somebody's like, hey, what was that? And I stand behind a vending machine for 45 minutes. Now I'm just, like, calling a UAV, and I'm throwing, like, smoke bombs, and there's, like – I take a guy, and I shoot him in the head, and someone's like, who is that? And I'm like, are you that insane? It's great. It's not stealth anymore. It's not like the dumb glasses he wears mean nothing to me anymore. Yeah. Like, I'm just running out there in the dark with a gun trying to shoot whoever.
I mean, like, you click back and I think your point rings true, right? Of like, the best stealth I've had recently, I would think, is probably Last of Us. And it's because those characters can't see. They can only hear. So you can freeze frame. You can do this. You can look through the walls. It's like, that works. And then when it was, now I'm going against like other survivors, right? Those are some of the most annoying parts of the game.
They should make a Jurassic Park stealth game where you have to stand still so the T-Rex can't see
That's
you.
That's good. Wow. You listening, Telltale, if you saw that franchise?
See, that would be awesome. I don't want to ever see motion controls come back, but it would be really awesome if you just had to stand there without
That's
shaking.
That's really clever.
And I was like, oh my God.
Right, I'm talking about it now. Make it your $1 million. Right. Make your $1 million.
See you guys soon. Speaking of, Konami has announced that the platform-exclusive DLC currently available for Metal Gear Solid 5 Ground Zeroes will soon be available to all, regardless of your console of choice. The news comes courtesy of today's Kojima Productions podcast via NeoGAF, which saw Hideo Kojima announce that the PlayStation-exclusive mission Deja Vu would... That's a typo. I thought I said Deja Vu World. Deja Vu would be available on Xbox 360 from May 1st in Japan, while the Xbox exclusive Jamais Vu will be coming to PS3 and PS4 on the same date.
So there you go. There was no reason to be excited for your console exclusive content.
Nope.
Wah, 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 wah. Remember when that game's biggest problem was his voice actor? Number four, Curve Digital has revealed three indie games are set to make their debuts on PS4, PS3, and Vita, and in the not-too-distant future. Titan Attack arrives in North America. We're listing the games now. These all sound like very generic games, by the way.
Like, this is the one where, like, when I was putting together the Roper Report, I would have glossed over this story, but I'm like, I know Colin would do it. So yeah. Colin's memory of, for some reason, calling out every indie game.
What do you
game,
mean, come on?
Oh, I was just going to say that one of these games is super, super good. Now it's going to highlight it.
Okay, no, we can talk about that. But I think they all have games that sound like they're NES games.
Oh, sure, yeah.
This all comes back to when I was talking about, like, our game, Knob Switch.
Yeah.
Which was me looking at things in the podcast room. Like, oh, light switch and doorknob, knob switch. You know what I mean?
Or Squaxel, where you turn squares into boxes. Or Titan Attacks arrives in North America on May 6th and in Europe on May 7th, not to be confused with Titanfall. The game has been described as a highly polished arcade action title inspired by games like Space Invaders and Galaga. But with many modern features, including a full ship upgrade system, online leaderboards, and stylish neo-retro visuals. All of that sounds awesome.
Yeah, right? That sounds like Resogun.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Awesome.
Not too far from me saying it sounds like an NES game, though, if they're just like, it's basically an NES game.
Yeah, yeah.
The Swapper, meanwhile, is a fantastically atmospheric puzzle platformer title that sees you master the ability to create clones of yourself and swap your consciousness between them, all the while trying to figure out what happened to the abandoned space station you find yourself on. North America on June 24th, and in Europe on June 25th.
That's
coming to PC, right?
Wasn't that one of our Game of the Year nominees last year?
I don't think it made the cut for overall Game of the Year, but that was a game that got, we gave it over a 9.5. I think Marty loved it, and it came out on Steam a year ago. And I did a demo of it with Jonathan Blow, who helped fund the game. He made Braid. Swapper is absolutely great. I highly recommend it to everybody. Fantastic puzzle platformer. I hate using the word atmospheric because it's so overused, but it really is. You're on this space station, and it's spooky and creepy.
They use it here, too, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, I know. That's what I mean. It's just one of those
Would you call it fantastically atmospheric?
Yeah, I would.
Okay, well. Then you're right in line with this press release.
The Swapper cannot be recommended highly enough.
Great.
Nice.
And the third wheel on the car.
It's the tricycle. The third wheel on the tricycle.
There you go.
Is Mousecraft, which will be available on Sony platforms and Steam on July 8th in North America and July 9th in Europe. The best way to sum it up is a quirky fusion of Tetris and Lemmings, which sounds like a great recipe.
Yeah.
But it's sort of like pizza and Chinese food, right? Like, I love both of those things. But
put them together. There was an Indian pizza by my house that was pretty good.
Really?
Yeah.
I've had that.
Yeah.
Which house? Your new one?
No.
Old one. Okay. Really? Oh, there's another one then in San Francisco. There's too many of these things.
All three games will support cross-buy.
You're right that the titles of the games are all like The Swapper and Mousecraft, where you swap the mice and then the
you do
tiles.
This happens, and oh my god.
Although Watch Dogs would have been a Nintendo game back in the day, too. That's just true. A funny title. Number five, Injustice Gods Among Us, which is totally a modern video game title, is reportedly set to receive a sequel in the future, according to reports from WonderCon. According to furious fanboys, Injustice Gods Among Us 2, or whatever it ends up being called, was briefly mentioned in a segment discussing the upcoming Arkham Knight, due out later this year. Are we happy about that?
Yeah, I mean, the Injustice comic book's amazing. Okay. So I'm
but do you like the game?
The game was, I mean, people loved the game. Like, I'm not a fighting game guy. I like the story of it fine.
Okay.
I like that I'm terrible at fighting games, so it would let me play through the story. And when it got really tough, the difficulty would drop down to the point of where I would check Twitter for the first two fights.
Yeah.
Just to get my ass kicked and then go in and actually do the fight.
Oh man.
So I can actually get through it. Because, like, funny. Yeah, I'm just not that guy.
Because I remember when Injustice came out, you were super into all the lore and the characters. You were doing Rewind Theaters. You were doing commentaries and conversations, all this stuff about how great it was. But then when you finally sat down to play it, it was sort of like, oh, that's right. This is a fighting game.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit hardcore. It's a little bit on the hardcore side.
Right.
Totally.
100%. Yeah, and that was the killer for me is like, there's that like level of like I have to sit there and commit. It's like Titanfall, right? Like I like first-person shooters fine, but I wasn't great at them. So I had to commit to just getting my teeth kicked in for 20 hours before I was actually good at that game.
I never played a lot of Injustice, but what impressed me like when I saw Destin or whoever playing it was the single player, like the challenges that are in it. Like it just seems like for many, many years, like I would have Street Fighter on the Sega Genesis or whatever, and it was like, well, okay, there's no – the only thing you can do is like fight these dudes. And now they've figured out how to do like single player in fighting games with like these elaborate challenge modes and, you know, system of unlockables and stuff. It's awesome.
I like that.
Cool.
All right. Number six, release date rundown. Madden NFL 15 is slated for release August 26th in North America and August 29th in Europe.
Woo!
Yeah.
I'm excited.
For you.
I like
that's
Madden.
Great. What's new this year?
I don't know yet. They haven't started talking about it. All they've done is confirmed a release date.
What do you mean they haven't started talking about it?
No.
Really?
Yeah, it's Madden. What do you need to know? Football. It's back.
That's an interesting site. I never realized that.
It's not until like summer
cycle.
Where it really ramps up.
Really?
Here's all the stuff. Yeah, like early spring, right before E3, we'll probably get a dump of information about what's happening.
About how the hit stick has been
exactly,
changed.
Exactly. How many.
That's because, I mean, I'm
geometry and the trigonometry coming off the helmets.
Like, I'm a big Smash Brothers fan, and there's like a new thing every day, and you read about it for months and months and months. I guess with these guys, they're just like, you know what it is. We'll let you know what the new stuff is.
The sports game cycle is funny because every year they're like, we finally are able to do what we are never able to do before. But then the next year, they'll be like, you know how last year the receiver AI was bullshit? Well, we fixed that.
I feel for them. It's so tough. It must be so tough to make a sports game.
Well, it's also like they get to a point where like I'm not a Madden guy. I'm more of like a FIFA guy.
Yeah.
And like it's awesome. Like they're out of things to do. And that's not technically true. Like there's always stuff to fix and refine. But like they've made this incredible, you know, football soccer engine.
Right.
And now it's like, guy, we have to put something on the back of the box.
I'm a big
like,
NHL hockey guy. I love the games. I play them whenever I can. And I remember a few years ago, they were like, guys, this year, Zambonis.
Yeah.
We're going crazy with Zambonis. Yeah. I'm like, the Zamboni physics. And like, wait a minute. That's an intermission thing that happens when I go to get a hot dog and a beer at a game. Yeah. Like,
well, it's that thing, right, of just like, you know, what we're talking about. You make this engine and you polish it, and then you just do these little tweaks, but you can't put on the back of a box. Like, we tweak this little thing, so you have to be like,
they have
this
to drum up
this,
two or three big
this crazy
the most realistic
Zambos.
Headbutting physics. Yeah.
We do, and that's why I buy one soccer game every about 3 or 4 years. Like, I bought the South Africa FIFA World Cup, and now whenever I want to play soccer, I play that, and now I'm finally ready to, like, get a new soccer game.
Yeah.
Cool. The four-game multiplayer compendium Sports Friends is coming to PlayStation 3 and PlayStation 4 on May 6th for $15.
It's been a long time coming.
I was going to say, do you guys know about Sports
Friends?
No,
I have no idea.
I remember the Kickstarter and all that stuff.
It was a big Kickstarter success.
Great title.
They raised $150,000 on Kickstarter. It's this collection of four games, but the one that everybody talks about is Johann Sebastian Joust.
Yeah.
It's funny because it has no graphics and no monitor. It's like a physical game that you play with a Move controller in your hand. And the way that it works is it's a contact sport where, like, you have a Move controller in your hand. So everybody else you can play with, you know, a huge group of people, they all have Move controllers in your hand. And you're trying to jostle – you're trying to, like, knock their Move controller without them reaching yours.
What do you mean no graphics?
Like, you're not playing on a screen. It's a physical game that you play, like, with a Move controller.
What?
So, like, you're holding it back here trying to get theirs without letting them touch yours.
And it's like a group game, so someone can try to sneak around behind you.
Yeah, I've never heard of that.
And so it is a contact sport where, like, you're trying to, by any means necessary, you could set ground rules if you wanted, you know. But you're trying to knock their Move controller, jostle it around with it while keeping yours steady.
Would you call it a video game?
I don't know. No. No, I wouldn't call it a video game.
Do you think
probably.
We're going to review it here at IGN.com?
I mean, Sports Friends, the other three games, they're more like a Nidhogg.
Yeah.
So they're more traditional. But, you know, Johann Sebastian Joust is really different.
Wow. This is one of those ones that's, I feel, similar to Watch Dogs. When Watch Dogs first got announced, we all flipped out, and then we heard about it for so long and saw it – not even saw it, I guess, really. We saw presentations for it for so long. We didn't care that much by the end, it feels like to me.
Yeah.
This is the same thing with Sports Friends, right?
Like, they've been talking about – this game has been
on, like,
the festival
circuit. I remember this being on the PlayStation blog
like...
forever, and it's at every festival, and it's just like, okay, what – just put it out. And so now that it's here, it sounds awesome again, but, like,
May 6th,
it needs, like, a charge, right? Like a little boost.
Yep. I would say it's not a video game. That particular one is not a video game. It's a physical game that you can play that you know that the Move controller facilitates.
Interesting. Wow. Okay. Well, it's out in a few days. You can try it out for yourself. Sony has announced Drive Club will be available on PS4 from October 7th in North America, October 8th in Europe, and October 10th in the UK, and October 11th in space.
Space! Look at that one. That came out finally.
Yeah.
That's another one.
That's a
been
real
through the, craziness.
That's a real
year.
Game that's coming out. That was supposed to be a PS4 launch game, right?
Yeah.
Launch
so
window.
Almost launch window's still open.
Yeah. Sometimes that window stays open for a long time.
Yeah.
That's almost a year delay, so I'm happy with that. Like, I'm not going, you know, crazy for this game, but like if I like to see a game not come out bad. I like the old Miyamoto quote about, you know, a delayed game is bad forever.
The opposite, but a game
a delayed game is bad once.
I like that old Shigeru Miyamoto quote, two apples in the bush equal a bird. The news comes courtesy of Superannuation, who cites Nolan's LinkedIn profile as a source of the information. He'd been with Naughty Dog for more than 3 years. With
you
two,
just skip, you skipped the first. You skipped the you, news.
Yeah, we missed the intro on that one. Number seven.
Naughty Dog has announced The Last of Us 2. Now, Naughty Dog has lost yet another member of its staff, this time in the shape of lead character artist in The Last of Us, Michael Noland. Michael Noland created the clickers. He was the main guy responsible for that. That's huge. I mean, that's just like the bad guy in that game. The guy who made the bad guy in that game. Is gone. The news comes courtesy of SuperNation, who cites Nolan's LinkedIn profile as a source of the information. He'd been with Naughty Dog for more than 3 years, with two of those focused on The Last of Us. Prior to this, he worked at Elite Danger Studio Frontier Developments.
We have a reader question.
Jeff in Portland, Oregon writes in and says, should I start panicking that the most reliable game studio working today, Naughty Dog, seems to be uncontrollably hemorrhaging staff? Things change frequently in games, I know, but it seems to be the heavy hitters dropping out, and I'm starting to worry that the future Uncharted / Last of Us / new IP may not be up to par with the legacy we've come to expect. Am I just being a damn fool, or do I have a legitimate concern? Jeff in Portland.
Okay.
I feel like we it's one of these weird things. People in the comments of the videos we put up from Podcast Beyond and sometimes in the article are saying, you guys keep bringing this up, blah, blah, blah. And it's because it keeps happening.
Every week
somebody else leaves, so we report the news, and then somebody else writes in about it.
I always look at something like Rare, which I feel like had this incredible run in the 90s.
Yeah,
and
this amazing shit now.
Right.
Okay.
He's going.
Let him roll.
And, you know, they started with the Stamper Brothers, and they had a whole bunch of amazingly talented people. And one by one, studios shifted, and the focus changed, and people left, and people went, and new people came in, and stuff like that. And I think they try to keep their vision, and they switched, you know, from Nintendo to Microsoft, and they made Grab by the Ghoulies and Perfect Dark Zero, and all of a sudden you're like, all right, well, you know, a couple of misses is not that bad. And then fast forward to like 10 years after Banjo-Kazooie, or 20 years, however long it's been, and they're making Kinect Sports Rivals, and they created the avatars for Xbox One. Talent's important. I think that studios go on forever, and I think that sequels and games will come out forever, but I think that individual stakeholders in situations like this are important. I think that having somebody like Amy Hennig leave is huge. I think having the guy who created the bad guy in the most important PS4 game, that's a big deal. Yeah. Like, I mean, watching people like that disappear, we saw the same thing kind of happen with Retro over the years. They made 3 Metroid Prime games, and then they went on to make Donkey Kong Country games. And, yeah, they're still making wonderful games, but a lot of the people who were there originally left. They went on to make Halo. They went on to make other things. So, yeah, the big companies, the big names, they'll stay there. But I think the individual people making individual creative decisions are something that we can never shun.
Sure. I mean, I don't think it's as doom and gloom as Jeff puts it. You know what I mean? Like, people have been concerned for a while. It's something we've talked about for a while. It is really disappointing to see this happen, but turnover is part of it. And then it all comes back to the fact of looking at what's happened, right? Like, Amy is removed from Naughty Dog. You know what I mean? Like, that, even though people argue about what exactly happened, we know she left.
Yep.
And they asked her to leave. It looks like. We think. We don't know.
Right.
Because nobody will talk about it. It seems like then all the departures afterwards make you think that there was a split in the team of, this is our vision for Uncharted.
Yeah.
And then there was another group saying, no, this is our vision, and they don't match up.
Right.
So Amy leaves, who, you know, was behind all these Uncharted games. Justin leaves, who was directing the overall Uncharted PS4 project. Todd Stashwick leaves, who was the main – you can see just objectively that it looks like the Uncharted project is drastically changing.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so then you see all these other people leave. You'd imagine it's either because it's their time. Imagine if this didn't happen. Maybe this guy would still leave, right? Maybe all these other different people would have left as well just because it was their time. We completed this project. We're not – you know, we want to do something different. That's where it all comes down to, but it looks so much worse because it's all happening at the same time, or at least not even the same time. Week after week, somebody else is leaving. There's still hundreds of employees there, right, that are working on amazing projects. So it's like, it sucks that this one guy who came up with the idea for The Last of Us clickers is leaving, but there's a team that animated them and made them and did different
things. That's exactly what it's like. It depends on what the knowledge transfer is like at a company like Naughty Dog. Like, I miss Ryan Clements every day. I miss Charles Agnette every day. But then we have people like Vince that are new and are awesome, and we have Brian Albert, and he's super rad. And, like, that's just part of it. Like, you know, people leave and new people come in the door, and, you know, everything that we do and everything that any video game developer does is a collective effort. And it's kind of hard to know. Like, if the question is should he be panicking, I would say no. Yeah. It's like Amy Hennig is the real deal. Like, she's incredibly talented and is a huge asset to any project that she works on. But, you know, Uncharted is a collective of hundreds of people.
Yeah.
And I am still, you know, excited about that project.
I think it's going to be a completely different product than what they started off on trying to make, but I don't think it's going to be a bad product.
Sure.
I mean, when we had the great point that you just made, by the way, about, like, IGN sort of mimicking that in some ways. And it reminded me of when we had Chris Jericho here for Up at Noon.
Right.
And you interviewed him, and he was talking about what's his name who left the WWE?
CM Punk.
CM Punk. And he said, you know, CM Punk left, and he basically said, like, you know, screw this place. I'm taking everything down. Like, Hulk Hogan left, you know.
Sure.
Macho Man left and all this stuff. As he said, the machine keeps rolling on.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that, like, these big names leave, but, like, no one at top down at Sony's going to come in and be like, wait a minute, those guys left? All right. Cancel Uncharted forever. Never do anything more with the Last of Us universe. Cancel the Last of Us PS4 port and all that stuff like that. So it'll keep going. But, yeah, you know.
It is kind of a philosophical question. Like, what's the individual contribution to a huge product like that versus how much of it's just, yeah, the machine, like the Uncharted machine. Like, how bad could an Uncharted game ever possibly be? Like, it's going to hit this crazy quality threshold regardless of, you know, the individual talents involved, I believe.
Yeah.
But then I don't mean to make light of, like, the contributions that awesome, you know, talented, incredible people make. So, you know.
The thing is, like, it's like anywhere else, right? You've had these people training with them, making these products with them. I mean, we're talking about, like, how Naughty Dog's structured, right? They're very flat in terms of people move around. Like, there's not many bosses. People are moving from team to team doing different things. These people have been learning, and now it's time for them to step up.
Yeah.
And they all have those skills. They all have that ability.
Yeah, the knowledge transfer thing you said is a great point. It's I mean, look at Walt Disney, right? He's dead. Last night.
See?
No, he's dead, right?
Yeah.
But I mean,
he's super dead.
But yeah, but I mean, people
super dead.
People like John Lasseter still work there, and they're indoctrinated in that school of this is what a Disney movie should be. And I think during the PS3 generation, Naughty Dog really solidified itself as to what one of their games should be.
Yep.
Right? They had three Uncharted and a Last of Us. I mean, that's fantastic. So we have to know now that, like, they've set this standard and this bar very high, and that whoever comes in next is not just going to go, like, it's, you know, it's a match three puzzle game or whatever.
Yeah.
So, fingers crossed.
All right.
Mass Effect Trilogy on Xbox One and PS4 popped up on the Chilean retailer Zmart Games.
A reader wrote it. He's like, even I don't trust Zmart Games. Why are you guys reporting on it? Well, there had already been rumors of this happening.
It's super plausible.
Yeah.
One of those things that, like, isn't officially happening, but it's happening. Come on.
Yep.
I'm on record as being not a Mass Effect hater, but I didn't finish 2 and then I didn't play 3. Like, I just kind of burnt out on it.
Yeah.
But even I am excited about this. Like, taken as a whole, the Mass Effect trilogy is an incredible space opera. The series definitely has its problems, but, like, it's an achievement in sci-fi world building. Mm-hmm. It's an achievement in player choice. If you've never experienced it, easily worth, you know, picking up.
It's one of those I would like to replay. I'd really, really love to play all three of those games again. And it's one of those, I don't know if I'll ever have the 90 hours it would take to do it right, but I'd love to if that was an option.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I think it's nice when these things happen for people that didn't get to experience it last time. I always say that the PS4 and the Xbox One are a lot of people's first video game consoles.
Right.
Just like a Blu-ray player was some people's first movie-watching device. And when a bunch of things got, you know, moved over from DVD to Blu-ray and they were $40 and people were like, we want new movies or whatever. It's great. It's fine. The release of Mad Max has been pushed back to 2015. What the hell is going on with this game?
Man, that game, I'll tell you, Lucy and I saw it at E3 and it was rough.
Yeah. Almost a year ago.
Yeah, it was rough, but it's another thing. I've been sort of torn a lot on this podcast. Avalanche is so good and Just Cause 2 was so good that it's kind of like, I don't know about this, but, like, I trust you guys. Like, you are an awesome, talented studio. So, you know, I'm going to be pretty neutral on it for now. But what we saw at E3, to be fair, was also very early. So, you know, they were showing it off a little bit earlier than sometimes folks do.
You kind of wonder why stuff like that happens then. Like, why release the first teaser image and, you know, why talk about the character direction? And doesn't it, like, this one takes place in Australia or something like that? And,
well, yeah.
You know, why, story
yeah.
Was,
right? Yeah. Yeah, like, why show you guys what you saw when it wasn't ready to be shown yet and then end up delaying the game to 2015? Because, I mean, that means that the game's been in development for
a while,
a couple years now.
Here's
it's called Mad Max, meaning it's not going to sell 25 million copies.
Well, it got people excited and talking about it, right? Like, I have not followed the Mad Max saga, right? Like, that was a game that got announced, and I was like, wow, I don't care at all about it. I've never seen those movies. Good to them. Hopefully it'll be awesome one day, whatever.
Yep.
But for me, like, we always walk this line, right, between being fans and industry insiders, right? Like, I'm sure this was a fiscal year kind of thing, right? It was a bump for their, like, I'm sure stocks actually saw some kind of reaction to the announcement that, hey, we have this Mad Max property coming. And people are like, oh, and like, there's an article about it, and there's this, that, and the other, you know what I mean?
Well, there's the movie, right?
Is there a new movie coming up too?
Or did it already come out?
No, it didn't. I don't think it came out, but I mean, it wouldn't.
But they were making one.
I think they're almost definitely making a Mad Max reboot or remake. Oh, or
how bad is it? This is just like the smallest inkling in my brain, and I don't.
I believe I once heard about a Mad Max.
It's happening.
Movie.
It didn't come out.
Okay.
Because I would have filed it in my brain next to Total Recall and all the other trash remakes that come out.
Just
I like the new Total.
Ammunition for the comedy button.
Yeah, I don't know. I get worried when games get delayed for years. But in the same way, you know, I like when I can get to finally play them and they're better.
It's right in the developer's wheelhouse with stuff like vehicular combat. And they had this system where you can, like, grapple onto opponents' vehicles and pull parts of their car off. And the physics react realistically. You know, but it did look early and a little bit rough. So, you know, hopefully, you know, the team has continued to improve.
Yeah.
Cool.
Or we'll use this extra time to, you know.
Yeah. As we said before, a good game is worth two birds in the bush.
And an apple in the tree.
Sony has announced the upcoming massive PS4 update 1.70 will be arriving in Europe on April 30th. A tweet from the company announced that the update, which includes both the Share Factory and option to switch HDCP off, will be launching at the end of the month. Presumably North America will be getting it around the same time.
Or by the time you've heard this.
Yeah.
I actually haven't turned my PlayStation 4 in a while. I don't think it's out yet, but who the hell knows? I just want to make sure we're covering it.
We're in that really cool arc where updates are awesome again.
Yeah.
I remember during the PS3, it was like...
This is just some systems updating.
Every time you turn on your PS3, which, you know, for a lot of people wasn't as often as it was in the start of the generation as it was towards the end. By the end of the generation, I was playing everything on a PS3. Yeah. But when I started, it would be like, oh, that PS3 game's out. 2 hours of updates. Got it. But now we're like, oh, there's a new update coming, and you can tweet your Facebook photos. I'm like, yeah. What is HDCP?
That's the thing that makes it where you can't... You can't record it easily. Like, you can't, like, you know, make your own videos off. You can't record off an HDMI or whatever.
The share features, the new share features are awesome.
Yeah.
The video editing, and it's still only export to Facebook. So please, God, you know, give us a YouTube button. I'm sure they're working on it. Please, Shuhei, give us a YouTube button.
Well, this one allows you to export it off.
Yeah, but it's still.
An extra step and everything else, but like,
you gotta put it on a flash drive.
I know. They're aware that there's like this thing that they need to fix.
I think it's. So, you know, Sony came out and was well ahead of Microsoft with their sharing features. Microsoft wasn't ready. They were behind. But then when they did launch their streaming stuff, it was awesome. You know, their Twitch integration was much better, and now Sony's come back and said, "Now we have this, you know, this fantastic suite of video editing tools." And now it's Microsoft's turn to play catch up again. So, you know, that I don't know that it's like directly that they're feeling the heat from one another that this is happening, but that's how it seems to me. Like,
and who
wins?
We do.
Exactly. It's awesome.
They all fight for us and then make beautiful things and they hand it to us and then they make them better and they have to keep fighting. And we just sit there and go,
give us all this stuff.
Give us all the free things.
Golden showers.
Okay. No.
Wow.
No?
No. We don't want golden shower photos. At all.
Google that, kids.
No. Do not Google that. No, what's the next story?
Jesus. Speaking of Just Cause. The rumored and teased Just Cause 3 may be released next year by Square Enix. Christopher Sundberg, founder and chief creative officer at Avalanche Studios, lists an unannounced sandbox action game on his LinkedIn profile, purportedly created by Avalanche Studios New York and published by Square Enix. Sundberg describes the project as a new installment in a very well-known game series. The game is scheduled for completion in June 2015 for next-gen console platforms.
I like how it's like, well, we're not announcing what it is.
Right.
But
yeah.
It's like Nintendo being like, you know, we're going to be plumbing for some new games in next month. Like,
an exciting new game is turning around the corners, and I hope you're carding to play it. Like, no, you just told us what that is. Yeah. You only have so many hats on your head.
That's
to
awesome,
wear.
Though. Just Cause 2 is fun.
Yeah, Just Cause 2 is great.
So wait, so we're saying that these guys are making this and Mad Max at the same time?
Well, that's sort of the bigger concern, is I actually don't know enough about the studio. This one specifically mentions New York studio, right? And so I would need to look up like whether they have multiple offices or stuff like that. But I hope it's not like the B team working on one game and the A team working on the other.
All right. And number 12. Infamous Second Son's Paper Power from Paper Trail That sounded like a really stupid thing. Paper Power.
Paper Power!
From Paper Trail won't be DLC. Sucker Punch announced via Twitter that anyone who completes all six missions will receive Celia's Mask and four custom Delson jackets. As if you didn't have enough Delson jackets. Yeah. As for why the new power didn't make the cut... Paper cut. I see what you did there.
I didn't write that.
Sucker Punch explained the amount of work needed to integrate it into the game was pretty substantial.
Oh. So yeah. That means the Paper Power is just cut? It's just gone?
Well...
It's. I mean, you just don't have it, right? Yeah, like... They probably worked on it, but couldn't make it work.
So you'll never actually get it.
That's what I mean. Like, yeah.
That's a bummer because I thought that's what all that stuff was leading towards.
Nope. Yeah. Just more content for
just
you to
more
play
jackets.
With.
So you got to see somebody else with a power.
A conduit with cool powers that you can't have.
And you can never have it.
I haven't even played through it. Have anybody played through it?
No.
It's one of those things like we played it before the game came out, so it wasn't working right, and then I've never doubled back to play it.
Yeah, I did the mission before it started, and it was like, cool, this isn't ready. Come back in a month.
On this website. And you're like, it didn't work. I was like, all right. So, yeah.
I mean, it's awesome that it's free DLC, so how much can someone really complain? But it's still, I don't know.
Here's the weird thing about it is I feel like this is a goofy complaint I'm sure to have, but if they would have just said, we're going to release a single-player story mission 3 months from now, I think it would be more on my radar because it would be something I knew I could sit down and play.
Yeah.
Whereas it started limping along, and now it's like, oh, I need to get to that. I need to actually play that, but I haven't.
Well, they started the first part of it started the week 1 week after the game came out, I believe.
Something like that. I thought the introductory was there, I thought, from day one, but then you had to wait a week for the
next. Like Dan Simpleton's point was this is obviously to stop people from trading it in.
Yeah.
So if you're 3 months later, that doesn't really help you.
Well, I mean, the hope would be that you wouldn't trade it until.
If you were holding out and not trading it in because you thought you'd get a new conduit power. I mean, trade it in.
True.
That's kind of a bummer because it's like the whole hook of that game is seeing these guys with these conduit powers chasing around the city, beating them up, taking their power and making it part of your adventure. So, and I actually really liked the way that conduit looked when you got to see it in the wild for a little bit. And I was hoping that you could turn into a paper airplane and fly around the city. That's just me. Yeah, it's a bummer. Okay. Well, that ends my infamous Second Son story for me then because I don't think I'll be going back to that game. I enjoyed it for while it lasted.
Yeah.
It's a fun weekend with it. It was one of those things we did the spoiler cast for it. It hasn't stuck with me. Like, it's not one of those games that I keep coming back to in my head. Whereas, like, I feel like The Last of Us.
Right.
Every couple of weeks,
sure,
I'd be like, oh my God. But Infamous Second Son, great weekend.
Yeah.
Ultimate, like,
it was an
popcorn
action
movie.
It was an action movie. Totally. Yeah. You saw it, you did it, you're done. There's not much to digest, right?
It's like The Expendables 3 or whatever. You're like, oh, well, there was that.
I feel the same way. I mean, even when I think about recent open world games, like Assassin's Creed is a game I went back to over and over and over again, night after night after night. And Infamous, exactly. I played one weekend and then was kind of done with it.
Mm.
But I did.
Did you finish it?
I did not.
Wow.
I got the third power. I don't know. Is that a spoiler to say what it is? But I got video.
Okay. That probably was a spoiler. But who cares? It's in the video review. We're sorry.
And I totally liked it. Like, it's not like I didn't enjoy it, but I just kind of had my fill.
Right. Sure. It happens to the best of us.
Yep.
All right. Well, I can't wait to play that Mad Max.
Me too.
But it's not in store soon.
No,
for what is, let's check in with the Andrew Goldfarb Memorial List of upcoming PlayStation software on all three platforms by the IGN editors.
I don't know that song.
It's because Andrew's dead to us now.
Oh, that's right.
So we do that.
That's right.
All right. Coming to your PlayStation 3 and your PS4, digital and retail, is The Amazing Spider-Man 2. A lot of people asking for that review. I don't think they send us advanced copies of that game. So you probably have an idea.
But that's a good sign, right?
Yeah, no, that's a bad sign.
It means they're so confident in their game that they don't need to send
when they don't send movie reviewers advanced screenings, and they go, just go to the theater on Friday night with the rest of the guys and see how it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Busted Move 4, the PlayStation 1 Classic, is coming to the digital platforms. Child of Light, a 9.3 according to IGN.com, is digital and on PlayStation 3
I started
and PS4.
It last night. Yeah.
How is it?
I enjoy it.
I'm super hyped for it.
It's very, very beautiful, and I think it's going to take me a little bit to get into just kind of what it's doing and why it's doing it.
Brian writes into beyond@ign.com, just like you can, fans,
beyond.
And says, I haven't heard you talk about Child of Light.
Yeah.
If I remember right, Andrew Goldfarb was pretty excited about it, but I haven't heard much about it, even though it releases very soon, today even. Any excitement for the game? I doubt it. Old podcast Beyond reference. Beyond.
This game is a fantastic sort of Grandia-style battle system, which is my favorite RPG battle system of all time, where everybody's sort of on, I don't know, it's hard to describe. Watch a video. Everyone's on the same bar, and then once you reach the end of the bar, then you get to, like, do your move.
Yeah.
but you can have attacks and stuff that interrupt other people and
send
bump
them back to the bar.
And so, like, that's a time where, okay, you, like, you know, 3/4 of the way through the bar, you pick your action, and then when it, you get to that final part, then you complete your action. And so if you're in that little window, you can have, like, you know, spells that will interrupt people or things like that. And it's this crazy combination of, like, real-time and turn-based that I think is super clever, super addictive. And that's me speaking from, like, Grandia and what I've seen of Child of Light. I'm super excited to dive into Child of Light. And I'm not even a big RPG guy anymore, but
I'm not either, but people told me this is like people have told me two things that really helped me here. And one is that it's only 10 or 12 hours long.
Oh, that's helpful.
And the other is that it's not incredibly hard.
Okay.
And I'm like, okay, great. That's how you get an old man like me back in the RPG
like
train.
South Park.
Totally. Yeah. Exactly like South Park. Oh, and it's beautiful.
See, it's one of those games where I know as much – it's a 9.3 on IGN. So many people are talking about I have to play it for Game of the Month, Game of the Year, all that stuff. I'm going to. But like my initial knee-jerk reaction to even seeing it was like, oh, this is beautiful. I'm so not in the mood for a JRPG right now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I'm so burned out right now from trying to platinum Persona and doing all these different things.
Just stop.
Well, I did. I'm playing Mario Golf now.
I had a slightly different reaction where I was like, I love the Ubi art engine. I love everything they've done with the Rayman games, and I really like the kind of stuff they're doing moving forward. So it was kind of weird for me to go, like, I'm such a huge, huge fan of the Rayman games, to sit down and play something that's kind of stylistically similar, laid out the same way, but controls much differently and much slower.
Yeah.
So it's just like, I pulled up with the speeding car, like, yeah, Child of Light! And I'm like, whoa, this is quiet and surreal and slow down. Yeah. So let me
you're
catch up.
Floating around and exploring.
Yeah.
And
so I'm gonna have to really take some time and just kind of dig into it. But I'm excited.
Report back to us.
Sure.
Daylight comes to PlayStation 4 as a digital download. That got a 5.8 from Brian Albert. JoJo's Bizarre Adventure All Stars Battle comes to PS3 digital and retail. Detail.
Ooh.
Digitales.
Digitales. Raiden 4 Overkill PS3 Digital. Rambo the Video Game PS3 Digital Retail. Featuring 16 missions based on the movie series.
That's based Rambo. On the movie Rambo?
Yeah, series.
Oh, the movie series.
Create chaos with Rambo's iconic bow, knife, and guns. Pit Rambo against 25 varying enemy types and use more than a dozen weapons.
What is this for?
Rambo the Video Game. PS3 Digital.
Okay.
I heard
it's
really
bad. It like... I'm picturing Contra in my head. Is it like that?
No, I believe it's... Isn't it like first person or something?
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's really... It's the worst thing ever.
Really? Just make a Contra game. Call Rambo and ship it.
Scourge Outbreak is coming to PS3s on the digital front.
Sure.
Yu-Gi-Oh! Millennium Duels comes to PS3 on the digital front.
Finally. I was getting tired of all those pre-Millennium Duels.
I know, right?
Child of Light, kids. That's the one to keep your eye on this week.
That's your pick of the week?
Yeah,
we haven't done pick of the week in a while.
Pick of the week!
Pick of the week!
Pick of the week!
I would say Mario Golf, but it's not out today. So
more on Sony platforms. But
I don't care.
Okay.
It does. Mario Golf does come out Friday.
Joe Cooley writes into Beyond at IGN.com and says, "Dear Greg, Brian, and the magical third chair of rotation, Beyond.
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 Justin, listen up, because this one pertains to your life.
Lay it on me.
My daughter was born on the 23rd of December. My wife and I named her Liara after the much-loved character from the Mass Effect series. When we explain to people where her name came from, we are mostly greeted with funny looks and discouraging comments. My question is, why would naming your child after a video game character be met with ridicule, but after a character from a book or movie is perfectly okay?" Joe Cooley.
Man, I don't know. Fuck those people. Like, it's your family. Do whatever you want.
Right. Yeah, 100%. I believe it. Yes, fuck them indeed. But... I mean, I think right now it's what we always talk about on this show, right, is that there's still a generation that has grown up with video games not being anything more than Mario punching a block and saving the princess.
Yeah, that's true. People don't understand. I still will, you know, if there's parents-in-laws or people coming over to my house and they see, you know, I don't know, GTA or some game like that, they're like, oh, they had, like, no idea that games had voice acting.
Right,
and
exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Sure, so I understand that. But I also think just because a character is named after... Like, I'm assuming that you named your daughter Liara because you played Mass Effect and you just really, really like that name. It's not like you have it tattooed on your lower back or something like that. Like,
I mean, there's two things there, right?
Sure.
Like, you either named your daughter Liara because you love the character in that game.
Right.
Which is kind of tough to expect your daughter will grow up to be a character that you love in real life.
I think right. I don't think it's that.
Or you named it Liara because that's a great name. Because right. it's a really cool sounding name and it's original and it's unique. I think you can explain that to people by saying this is great work of fiction called Mass Effect 3.
Exactly right. Like you see, ever since the movie The Bridges of Madison County came out, Madison has been one of the most popular women's names, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. name for little girls, little baby girls. And it's not because everybody loves that movie, but it's just that put the idea in their brain. And they're like, oh, you know, I like that name. Like yeah. it yeah. leads, you know, the one leads to the other. So I don't know, man. Like I'm super excited to be a dad because like we get to have this family. Like my wife and I are set in our ways. Like we're living our life. We have our little house and now we get to introduce somebody new to that and be this like unit of like unique, special people on our right. own. And it definitely gives me a feeling of like, I don't care what anybody else thinks. Like, this is how we're going to do things. This is how we're going to dress her. Like, you know, this is what we're going to name her. So
by the time did you say daughter?
Yeah.
Okay. By the time your daughter, I will make sure I heard everything correctly,
sure.
is old enough to be having kids, uh-huh. babies having babies, oh, video yeah. games will be an accepted part
so
of
like 15 years from now.
Fictional society. Well, no, like that.
I really don't think this is a blame this on video games being part of a fictional society thing. I yeah. think that if he had said, this is my daughter, she's named after a Star Trek character.
Yeah, I named her Arwen somebody, from yeah, Lord of the Rings.
Sure. That's like, a good
somebody
point. That's
somebody
a good point.
Would have been like, well, why? Instead of just being like, I really think that Data is a cool name.
I guess it boils down to I'm talking about people being judgmental in general. Like yeah. this is one thing that I've learned that I'm becoming a dad is that everyone has an opinion on how you need to do things, how you should be doing things, what's right, what's wrong, and I say F all of them.
Yeah.
Like, you know, listen to some advice, sure, but like, you know, live your life. Like
whoa,
yeah.
and don't go chasing the papers.
Just live your life.
Whoa.
Whoa.
That's a Rihanna song.
I know. It just took me a while to figure out.
To catch up to where we were?
No, I heard it.
Okay.
I knew it was happening.
Speaking of dad questions, here comes another one.
Oh, geez.
We're pertaining them all to your life. This one comes from Graham. He says,
Dadcast.
Gaming has been scarce for me during the past 7 weeks since my daughter was born.
Oh, great.
On the few occasions I've had time, I have been spent it on my Vita, working my way through Persona 4. Great game, get it on sale. Recently, I had my first real chance to play my PlayStation 4 since the little one was born. I turned it off after only 15 minutes and went back to playing the Vita. I have recently bought a 3DS as well, so handheld gaming is very much the focus of gaming right now. My question is, do you think there will ever be a time where handheld gaming will be seen as more relevant to the gaming industry than console or PC gaming? And do you ever find yourself more inclined to reach for the handheld rather than the controller?
7 weeks?
7 weeks.
Seven
and it's over.
Weeks?
That's all it takes.
Oh,
and you're done.
Goodness gracious, Greg.
Wait a minute. I love my Vita and my 3DS. I would be a great dad.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, that's what...
Is that how it works?
Yeah, I think so.
The actual question is about the, you know, the relevance and why handheld gaming will it ever be, you know, cutting edge or seen in the same way as console games. The answer is probably not. Like, I love handheld games. I probably play more, you know, as much or more handheld games than console games.
Are we counting iPhone games in there?
Yeah. But they're not pushing the envelope in the same way of, like, narrative sophistication.
Sure.
And, you know, people do – everyone says graphics don't matter, but they do help you, you know, create – worlds of a certain depth and sophistication that are hard to do, you know, without advanced graphics. And like, that's all stuff that matters. Like
yeah.
that's in terms of this being an artistic medium, you know, and pushing that forward, it's harder to do on a handheld, man. Like, I am gonna play and love the shit out of Mario Golf, but it's not, you know, a game that's gonna blow people's minds in the way that something like Last of Us did.
Right.
And that's not really doable on a Vita or a handheld.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean that's the thing. I don't think there'll ever be a time where they're more important or,
right.
you know, they'll,
sure.
they'll be the premier product everybody's talking about unless, like, Nintendo really figures it all out or something. But there's just something about those, you know, we always talk about bite-sized experience.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
That golf is, right? Like, especially with all the challenges in Mario Golf. Like,
yep.
it's like, I have a ride on the train that I can do that. And there's a big difference between, all right, I want to put on headphones and I want to listen to this, you know, 30-minute cutscene and hope I get, you know what I mean? There's all these different things you have to get to.
I think there are less and less AAA games that are cinematic, gigantic,
yeah.
you know, movie experiences. I think we're moving towards the bite size more and more, mm-hmm. whether we like it or not, whether gamers agree or whether we go, you know, that's not real gaming. It is. And people are going to consume games that way. And if you're a dad, like, you can't bring your crying baby to a movie theater, and you can't
don't.
Bring your crying
a
baby
to... A lot of people try. Don't do it.
Can't bring your crying baby to a cinematic movie-like video game experience either. I mean...
Yeah.
No, and I also don't want to expose... Like, I play, you know, Gears of War, and I play all these franchises, and when I have a little baby, even though she can't understand what's going on in the world, like, that doesn't get turned on when she's awake.
Yeah.
yeah.
Like, that's important to me, but I will play something like Hearthstone on my iPad, like...
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the thing. Different strokes.
I do think that handheld gaming is a life's, you know, life send. Is that a
godsend?
Godsend.
A life
there you go. I do think it's a godsend for new parents.
Sure,
like,
yeah.
I'm assuming that console gaming is going to come to an end. I've been playing a lot of Elder Scrolls Online. That's all going to stop.
Yeah.
You know, there's going to be no more of that.
I mean, the interesting would be the future where they merge, right? You already see it a bit with the Vita being a conduit for your PS4 and stuff. And as technology gets better with PlayStation Now, that would be the thing where if you consider that handheld gaming where you have a box or a connection at home that's still playing this, or the thing you are holding beams to your TV. And you have that
This is what I want more than anything. I want it from Sony and to really clarify their vision for that, and I want it from Nintendo too, where my 3DS and my Wii U are the same system. I can play it on the train. I can hook it up to my TV when I get home.
Yeah.
I'm not – like the older I get, the less really I want my games to be 25-hour long cinematic, super realistic experiences, and I want something that I can enjoy for a few hours.
That was
you know?
The thing for me. I keep taking photos of my Mario Golf time and tweeting it out, like how long I've played it. And they're like, "Oh, if that's your most ranked game, you clearly never played Bravely Default." And I'm like, "You're right, because I don't want to play another 100-hour. You know, no, thank you."
I don't think I'm with it to you though. That it's the form factor that matters, or you know, being able to take like a Wii U game on the go, because it's about the software. Like, is that software designed for a bite-sized experience? Like, we've talked about Uncharted earlier and Last of Us earlier. Incredible games, but they're not conducive to playing for 12 minutes train.
No. Flipping it closed and going on to something
Which
else.
Is exactly how I played Uncharted for Vita, and that's why I never felt a connection with that game. I mean, among technical reasons.
No,
But I mean, to sit down and like I was, you know, on a train or on an airplane, I'm like, I'm going to play this for 20 minutes and then play something else. Like, I never really felt like this is where I need to be. So.
I've actually kind of got hooked on the Family Guy mobile game. It's their ripoff of Simpsons. You get to make your own Quahog and send the characters on missions and stuff and unlock Lois and Stewie and all these guys. And I don't even like Family Guy that much, but the way it's set up where, like, I'll check in twice a day and I built the high school and now Kris Griffin is doing a silly thing. And, like, it's just like a little break that I take over lunch and then when I get home from work. And, like, that sort of pop in, do something for a few minutes and be entertained and pop back out. Like, that's why I love my 3DS so much and, you know, handheld gaming in general.
Okay. Final email this week isn't even a question. Comes from Isaiah. Isaiah writes and it says, Beyond.
Beyond.
There you go. Dear Greg, Colin, and ever-rotating third chair.
That's me.
That's you. You're Colin. Say something about the Islanders or hockey.
Chick-fil-A is the greatest
there
restaurant
you go,
in the
thank
world.
Thank you. My name is Isaiah, and I host a podcast called The Party Chat. As you know, We're Alive podcast is coming to an end soon, and The Party Chat are huge fans. You see, we want to purchase 2 tickets for the live series finale. However, we are a small podcast in Michigan with a small fan base that probably doesn't reach anyone who would be close enough to the show. We would like to offer to the Beyond Nation a chance to win 2 tickets to the event that is coming up. Give the tickets away any way you see fit. Let us know who the winners are. We'll hook them up with Wayland Productions. If you're not up to speed here, We're Alive is a zombie drama, a zombie radio play that's been going on for quite a while on the internet, zombiepodcast.com. Years ago, I mentioned it on a Beyond and a Game Scoop, and they saw a crazy spike in numbers and reached out to us, and we all became friends.
Yeah, and you were on a few episodes,
right? I'm a character.
Right?
Yeah. Did a fan cast for a while with Brittany.
Did you live?
I don't want to spoil it for people.
Come on.
I want them to go listen and catch up or whatever. However, they are finally wrapping up their many-year run, and they're doing a live event in L.A., July 19th. I'll be there. I'll be hanging out. So if you want to come see us, do that. You go to zombiepodcast.com for details. However, if you email beyond@ign.com with the subject line, We're Alive in L.A., I will hook you up with this Isaiah guy, and he will figure out a way to get you tickets, your 2 tickets. The first one I see in the morning, or I guess this afternoon when I click through, I'll send it off to you that way.
Obviously, make sure that you can go. It's in Los Angeles.
This is just like Podcast Beyond 200 and 300. Don't be a jerk and RSVP for this and then be like, "Oh, I actually live in Alaska. There's no way for me to get to LA." If you're going to be in the LA area July 19th and you can really go to a live show at a performance center.
Don't just take free shit unless you're going to use it, because otherwise you're a hoarder.
Yeah. You ruin it for somebody else, just like we talked to him. But I know that the kids who listen, especially the ones who listen, by the time you watch this on the video, you're screwed. This has been going for like 48 hours. But everybody
you
else.
You got to see us, though. That was fun. Right?
What do you know? Ladies and gentlemen, that's Podcast Beyond, episode 340. Thank you so much for joining us. Remember, every Tuesday we post the MP3. Every Wednesday we post the video version on IGN.com, YouTube.com/IGN, and of course the PlayStation 4 IGN app. So download that and keep up with everything we're doing by going to Twitter. Follow IGN at IGN. I'm Game Over Greggy. My Italian meatball, Brian Altano, is Agent Bizzle. And then Justin Davis is Error Justin.
Mm-hmm.
E-R-R-O-R. Justin.
You got it.
I know. I just want to make sure they get it.
Yeah.
I've seen enough. It's been on the screen the whole time we've been doing this video. As you know, ladies and gentlemen, every Podcast Beyond ends in a segment we call Ryan's Wrap-Up, where we play a song you submitted to beyond@IGN.com. Today's comes from Tim. Tim says, Beyond.
Beyond.
I've been listening to Podcast Beyond since last summer, and it quickly became something I looked forward to each week. In addition to your discussion about all things PlayStation, it's great to hear music from your millions and millions of listeners. If you ever have a week with an opening, I'd feel privileged if one of my songs was featured during Ryan's wrap-up. The song I've sent to you is called, quote, The Wait. It's from my new EP, releasing May 6th, entitled The Night Before the War. This is The Wait from The Night Before the War. The EP will be released as a free download for a limited time at noisetrade.com/TimNester, N-E-S-T-E-R. Find me on Facebook, Tim Nester Music. Find me on Twitter, Tim_Nester. Tim, it's our privilege to play The Wait from The Night Before the War. Beyond.
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 Take this burden, take this cold heart, throw them in the fire. Take this weak hand, lead me forward, lead me through. I will wait, oh, I will wait for you. I will wait, oh, I will wait for you. Show me purpose, show me true love, hold them in the light. I need healing, it's been too long, can you make it right? I will wait, oh, I will wait for you. I will wait, oh, I will wait for you. I will wait, oh, I will wait for you. Oh, oh. I will wait, oh, I will wait for you.
Octodad. Nobody suspects a thing. Octodad. Octodad.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over a million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit. But more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my two wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I'm hoping to open up the conversation about balancing careers and family. The one thing I constantly hear successful people say, without fail, is that they wish they'd spent more time with their kids. That's time no one can get back. So I decided to create Business Dad to engage in the conversation about how we're spending our time now, providing a forum for successful dads to share their joys and challenges of being a working parent. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier. And while this podcast will talk about business and will definitely be featuring dads, I think everyone can learn something from these incredible conversations as we unpack the expectations we all have about careers, relationships, and ourselves. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.